I'm delighted now to welcome on the line, but first of all, we have Caroline. Good afternoon, Caroline.
Hello.
And we have David Stafford as well on the other line. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Are you actually sitting near each other at the moment?
Yes.
We are sitting near
Do you want
each
us to
other,
sit
yes.
further apart?
No, no, that's fine. It's fine. I'm just making sure that you're okay, you know, that the relationship's fine, that you're able to share a phone, or you wanted separate phone lines. I wasn't sure, so I'm just making sure.
No, we're still married.
Good,
we're still
good.
Married, still friends.
Well, first of all, I'll talk about the book maybe, Halfway to Paradise. I'll ask Caroline the reason for writing this book.
The reason, well, Billy is the best rock and roll singer that Britain has ever had, really. I mean, if you think about his competition around the 1960s, I mean, there wasn't anybody. Elvis was in the army by then.
Yeah.
And Cliff's gone a bit soft and got religion.
Yeah.
So there was no competition. He was really it.
Yeah, and...
For that brief time, you know?
Yeah.
Before the Beatles came and swept everybody away.
We'll maybe talk a little bit about that in a moment, but Caroline, he kind of had a bit of Elvis about him, didn't he, as well? His kind of stature. Somebody said earlier they called in saying how much he sounded like Elvis. And, you know, there's no
he
getting away from it.
He sounded very like Elvis, yeah. To begin with. Yeah, his first album that he wrote all the tracks on was a fantastic album called The Sound of Fury.
Yeah.
And he sounded quite Elvis-like then. But he also sounded a little bit of Eddie Cochran, and he looked very like Eddie Cochran.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And he went on tour with Eddie Cochran on that fateful tour where Eddie Cochran died. He actually died on Billy's
birthday.
Oh,
I didn't know he was there. Wow.
Yeah, he was on the same bill. Yeah. And he died on Billy's birthday.
Sorry, Dave, carry on.
No, I was just going to jump in and say the other thing is it's a rattling good tale.
Yeah.
Because it's got those two great elements that all good stories should have, which are sex and death. It's a tale full of sex and a tale full of death. I mean, he was one of the sexiest guys who's ever lived, and anybody who saw him, and certainly anybody who met him, will attest to that.
Yeah.
That he was, you know, utterly irresistible. He was dripping with sex.
I can fully relate to that, David, of course, but...
is there a problem that you have as well?
the short answer is no, so we'll... what I find quite amazing about Billy Fury is, you know, we look at stars who have been in the limelight for a long time. Of course, Elvis really did kind of reinvent himself back in 68 and then had a massive career in the 70s and beyond. You look at Cliff, and he just keeps going, and you know, goes through different eras. And Billy Fury had quite a shorter lifespan as far as his career, and yet there's still this real attraction about him and a real love for him. And you know, even people ringing today saying how much they like Billy Fury.
I think it was possibly because he was the real thing. He was a genuine rock and roller. A genuine performer, a fabulous performer, and a wonderful singer. And I think that affection that he was also a really nice guy. I mean, there's no denying that. That's another thing that everybody will tell you who met him. You know, there was no side to him. There was no phoniness about him. He was just an ordinary bloke from Liverpool who was blessed with this massive talent. And I think the reason people, you know, still like him is because that came over the footlights and you saw it on the telly and heard it on the records.
Now, Caroline, I think it was you who mentioned the Beatles coming along there, and the Beatles really were a turning point for a lot of not just stars in the UK, but in America as well, where, you know, there was a kind of a lot of crooning going on after the rock and roll era died down a bit, and suddenly the Beatles come along and blow it all up again. But before the Beatles turn up, Billy Fury is there, and actually he's in Liverpool, of course, so you could say he was really the pioneer behind it all, you know.
And strangely, the Beatles did audition to be his backing band when they were...
Wow.
Was it the Silver
Beatles? The Silver Beatles.
Yeah,
the Silver
Beatles. Yeah.
I mean, did he play in the Cavern, and was he well-known on the scene in Liverpool?
No, he was a bit before the Cavern, and he didn't actually play much around Liverpool. He was very much an amateur. in Liverpool, because he was really discovered before he started performing. His big discovery, he was properly discovered. He showed up, he'd written some songs. He was an amateur player, you know, played guitar a bit, yeah. sang a bit, and had written some songs, and wanted to sell his songs primarily. So he went down to the Esoldo Birkenhead, where Larry Parnes, the great Larry Parnes, the great manager of the time, had got a package tour on with Marty Wilde and Vince Eager, and the John Barry Seven were there as well. And he just sort of knocked on the door and said, "Can I sing you some of my songs?" And Mr. Parnes said, "Yes, I'll sing them too." So he sang three songs and had a word with Marty Wilde. And Marty Wilde said, I don't think I should be singing these songs. I think he should." And so, literally, Larry Parnes pushed him onto the stage. He'd never performed in front of a big audience before, but he acquitted himself well. He sang his three songs, and Larry signed him there and there, and he joined that package tour that yeah. night. So he'd never had that sort of, you know, long career being a wannabe. You know, he was just straight in there.
Now, I've got a quick question for you. I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but it's something that came from the... it's something in the back of my head, and it's, you mentioned John Barry there. Now, John Barry was James Bond theme and so on. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, yeah. Now listen to this. Of course, you know the song. I'm waiting for it to play. Here we go. Hopefully it will play. Please play. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm going to ask you, don't you?
Yeah. I will.
Is that where the James Bond theme comes from?
No, because that was after the James Bond theme.
Oh, right.
Much earlier than that. Actually, John Barry was also Adam Faith's arranger.
Now that makes sense as well, because some of those songs sound very similar.
The first manifestation of that little riff, that James Bond riff, is on Adam Faith's Poor Me.
Poor Me, yes.
Which was, I think, Adam Faith's second single, which has got that on the start of it. But it was something that was obviously in John Barry's head for quite a long time before the James Bond theme.
Well, I'm just about to
find
it now.
That was I Will, which was a much later, Billy.
So this is the Adam Faith one, so let's have a quick listen. Yes. It's there, isn't it? Yeah. Very similar, yeah. Could be I Will, yeah. Absolutely.
And it could be the James Bond thing.
We're going to play Halfway to Paradise in a moment. When did this song come in his career? Because obviously this is a defining song for him, isn't it?
Yeah, after he'd done the rock and roll stage, and rock and roll had died out of fashion a bit, which was around 1961, 1962, he moved on to doing these big beat ballads that they called, and this was one of the first. It was also one of his, I think he went to number three. He never ever had a number one record,
yeah.
But this one went to number three and established him as a major star. And it's also, for very good reasons, the one that everybody remembers, that everyone associated with the name of Billy Fury. Towards the end of his life, because everywhere he went, he had to sing Halfway to Paradise, and he actually came to hate the song.
Oh, that's a shame, isn't it?
A million times, yeah. but I still love it.
So, I think with this song, it so defines him really as an artist in many ways. I was going to ask Caroline, because you know Billy Fury. In fact, do you ever get bored of hearing it?
No, not that one. No,
absolutely.
There's a few others. But
let's have a listen. Of course, to the great Billy Fury in Halfway to Paradise. Here we go.
You leave me halfway to so far away. So to know your heart's a treasure.
Fury, of course, and Halfway to Paradise. I was going to ask you as well, on you briefly mentioned there that you didn't have a number one hit single, which I find quite amazing, because today, if you didn't have a number one hit single, you'd probably be dropped after a while, wouldn't you? But and how did he go down? This is pre-British invasion in America. Did he make it in America? I'm not sure about that.
No, right. Not at all. There were a few. He appeared on Shindig, which was a big program in America, big pop program in the 1960s, which was produced by Jack Good. But he didn't. He just didn't do it. I don't know why.
No, it
didn't work.
It was difficult for British artists. I mean, Cliff had the same problems, didn't he? Making it into America.
Yeah.
But strangely, his backing band had a number one hit in America before the Beatles had a number one hit in America. His backing band for a while were the Tornadoes.
Oh, of course,
they had a massive worldwide hit, Telstar. And they recorded that while they were still working as Billy's backing band. And they were under management to Larry Parnes.
Yeah.
And they were offered a big tour of America. But Larry said that if they want to go, then Billy's got to go too.
Yeah.
And Billy and Larry said, and the Americans didn't want Billy, they just wanted the Tornadoes. So they never got their tour of America, which was a bit unfair.
And as you mentioned earlier, the Beatles come along and kind of change. I mean, Elvis comes along, changes music in a big way, you know, has such an influence on it. The Beatles come along and change it yet again, and even Elvis sees that. What happens to Billy Fury? From somebody who is a fan of his but doesn't know a lot, you could be forgiven just for thinking that he dropped off the face of the planet, maybe, but what happens next?
Well, yeah, I mean, he did have a lot of, you know, fairly big hits. Even in 63, he had, I think it was three top 10 hits.
Yeah.
This is after the Beatles had started. So he did last for a good long time after the Beatles, a couple of years anyway. But eventually, you know, his kind of music and his style of performance and all that just dropped out of fashion. And he eventually, towards the end of the 60s, Decca, his record company, when his contract came up for renewal, they didn't renew it. And then he got a new contract with Parlophone and released some records on Parlophone. But then he did have sort of a double comeback.
Right.
His first comeback was, do you remember a film in the early 70s called That'll Be the Day?
Well, I was born in 76,
There was a film in 73, thereabouts, called That'll Be the Day.
Yeah.
There was a David Putnam production with David Essex in it.
Right.
And Billy was in that, basically playing a parody of himself, playing, you know, an old-time 1950s, 60s rock star, performing at the end of his career on a holiday camp. And he's sending himself up, but he's still absolutely mesmerizing. And it did sort of revive his career. There'd also been that, there was a bit of a rock and roll revival at the beginning of the 70s with bands like Sha-na-na and Shawaddy Waddy.
Yes.
And
Greece, of course, the 50s were back in again, weren't they? Sorry. That kind of rock and roll era was back.
Yeah. And Billy was, there was this huge rock and roll revival show at Wembley Stadium that had Chuck Berry and Little Richard and all sorts of people in it. And Billy was on the bill in that, and apparently Billy just stole the show, basically. He was still, he'd still got it. But, yeah. And then he had a minor come back towards the end of his life, but he was very ill by this time. All his life he was plagued by terrible ill health that was the result of having rheumatic fever when he was a child. It left him with dicky heart valves and all sorts of other health problems.
And I know in the book you do go into his troubled upbringing, which we're not going to have time to this afternoon. Unfortunately, time has beaten us, but I want to just ask Caroline. Caroline, why is it that we're still talking about him?
Yeah, hang on. Caroline's phone seems to have died.
Oh, sorry, okay.
I'm going to have to pass you over to Caroline.
All right, okay. Hi, Caroline. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Caroline, just a final question, because time is beating us, unfortunately. Why are we, in your opinion, still listening to Billy Fury's songs, and why is he still popular all these years later?
Well, I go back to what I said in the first place. He was our greatest rock and roll singer. There's nobody else.
Yeah, simple as that. And fantastic. Yeah. Well, Caroline, thank you for coming on. Thank you to David as well. We wish you all the best with the book. It's available on our website, tre.radio. We've only really skimmed the surface as far as his life and his upbringing and so on, and all that he's done in his life. But if you want to get the book, you'll find out a lot more. It's called Halfway to Paradise, The Life of Billy Fury, and it's available on tre.radio. If you click on our bookshop banner, you can order the book there online. Thank you, Caroline, and say thank you to David for me as well.
Great.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.